Good morning. I'm Jamie Corbin. I'm an assistant professor at the University of South Florida College of Public Health. And to give you a little background like Brian did in terms of how I got here, my area of study is health disparities, and I do a lot of work with older women, and particularly related to chronic illness and to depression. And in 2011, I was contacted by some of my colleagues to say, hey, what do you think about doing a study looking at online risk for dating violence in older women? And I just kind of said, you know, I don't really think that this is a problem. And so I at first wasn't really interested. And then ironically, about a week later, I was having lunch with some friends of friends, and there was an older woman there, and she started talking about some experiences that she'd recently had dating online. And listening to her, I was thinking, my gosh, if this was a 15-year-old girl, there would be interventions all over the place, and we would be doing something. And instead, they were listening to this story as it was a normative experience. And so I called up Carla and Marty, and I said, you know what, I think you're right. I want to be part of this study. And so in 2011, we embarked on a series of different studies that looked at online risk for older women who were dating. Now, the literature, there's not a whole lot of literature out there. We know that between April 2009 and May 2010, Pew reports that social media use by older adults has increased dramatically, nearly doubling in the population 50 to 64, with more than half of those people now having social networking sites. Even more dramatically are the increase in the older population, so 65 and older. We see that about 40% of them now have social networking sites. And we see that there are similar increases in the proportion of those older women who are also online dating. Adults age 60 plus are now the fastest group of individuals who are reaching out towards the internet in terms of dating online. There's a lot of benefits towards online dating for this population, particularly when mobility is an issue, when they're having a hard time making connections in their communities. And so they really report there's a lot of benefits of online. But we know that the majority of what we know about these experiences, however, have been focused on that of younger populations, and little is known about the experiences of older women with online dating. Now, we're very familiar with a lot of the studies that are out there in terms of risk for using social networking sites and using online sites in terms of bullying and risk for violence, but mainly among younger populations. We know that in general, younger populations tend to engage in risky behaviors online. They post sexually explicit photos, often post a lot of information about themselves, where they are, what they're doing, and things that put them at risk for intimate partner violence. We also know that online relationship seeking has been related in younger populations to higher risk for STDs and even HIV. However, we don't know nearly as much about what is happening with older populations online. What we do know is that older populations are the least likely to change their privacy settings. So younger populations have become very savvy at learning how to lock their profile and manage who could view their information. Yet older populations report being less aware of those sorts of protective features. They also tend to be less knowledgeable about who can access their content. And we believe from some pilot data that the information that they share publicly may actually be putting them at risk for intimate partner violence. So we started this study with a pilot study where we sent emails to just a convenient sample of older women who were reporting on MySpace, which was a more popular tool at the time we did this pilot study. And women were reporting that they were using that tool, MySpace, to look for relationships online. They were open to dating online. So we sent a brief survey to a group of women and asked questions about their experiences online. And immediately, we got an incredible response back in terms of what women were experiencing. And of our population, we found that an overwhelming number of them, 55%, had felt threatened by someone that they had met online. 40% of them reported having been financially exploited, and 38% actually reported that there was harm. Now, we know that this was a convenient sample, and we instantly struck a chord with these women in terms of reporting back their experiences. Unfortunately, by the time we had funding to actually do this study, Justin Timberlake had bought MySpace. MySpace was no longer the fad, and we were kind of in a little bit of a difficult position. But we knew that women in our pilot study were experiencing rates at much higher levels than we would expect in an in-person dating situation. And little was known about how they processed this experience. So our goal in the next phase of our study was to better understand the lived experiences of women 50-plus who were dating online. And in the presentation today, I'm going to talk very briefly about the overall results, but focus more on the strategies that these women shared with us in terms of how to minimize the risk for dating violence and how to increase their safety when attempting to date someone online, because we learned a great deal from them in terms of what we can do in terms of an intervention strategy. So as I said, MySpace went out of fashion. That's the difficult thing about applying for funding and waiting for funding and in the changing world of technology. So we had to move towards a different tool, which affected our strategies a little bit. We couldn't search through Facebook. Facebook isn't openly accessible, so we couldn't search for someone who was looking to date online the same way we could with MySpace. So we moved towards a free dating site, plentyoffish.com, which allowed us to set up a profile and to be able to interact with women and ask for participation in our study. Now, the issue with doing that is we weren't able to just send out blanket emails and instantly strike a chord with those people who had either positive or negative experiences. We had to set up a profile, you had to make a contact with someone, and they had to want to respond. So we knew we had some limitations there. Mainly we got people who were having a positive experience because they were still on the dating website, where likely in our initial sample, we may have gotten people that were no longer on the website because they had had more negative experiences. But regardless, we found some really important information from the women we interviewed. We interviewed 45 women aged 50 and older, and these were equally divided, 15 each, African American, Black, White, and Latino, Hispanic, Latino. All of these women lived within 50 miles of the 33602. This is the downtown Tampa zip code. We wanted to be sure we could really relate to that population right there. And all of the women had to be seeking new relationships online. We did telephone interviews with these women. We found that they were really leery to meeting in person, but they were very open to doing a phone interview. Most interviews actually went an hour and a half to 2 hours in length, even though we tried to minimize the content. The women really wanted to talk about what they were experiencing. And so all of the interviews were recorded, transcribed verbatim, and then a team of researchers coded and analyzed that data. Now, women shared a whole host of experiences, both positive and negative, with online dating. They talked about success stories, and they undoubtedly talked about negative situations in which they felt at harm, where they were in uncomfortable situations, and things that we know put them at increased risk for intimate partner violence. However, because of their experiences, they also were able to put together a number of things that they do to help reduce their risks. So both women who had had a negative experience, they had a ton of information for us in terms of how to be safer. But even women who had never had a negative experience were able to share with us a lot of their tips and strategies for keeping themselves safe. Now, those tended to relate to two categories, one being online. So they talked about the things they did online when they were first meeting a potential partner. How did they keep themselves safe before they knew enough about this individual? But inevitably, in most cases, the goal was to move that relationship from online offline. And so women also shared with us some of the strategies that they used to keep themselves safe when they were meeting a person for the first time in person. Now, women really talked about sharing limiting the information that they share. Now, interestingly, in our pilot study, we did abstractions of the MySpace profiles, and we were able to tell that women didn't limit the information on there at all. We could easily find addresses, phone numbers, risks, mental health issues, disabilities, past dating violence. Women shared all kinds of stuff on their publicly available MySpace page. However, when we were on the actual dating site, they talked about how they limited what they were sharing on that site. In particular, they never gave full names, addresses, telephone numbers, where they worked, or family specifics. In general, a lot of our women were pretty savvy about how to protect themselves online. They also were very careful when messaging, not to divulge too much information, and that was one of their big strategies, that if you wanted to protect yourself, you needed to be careful with how much information that you shared with a potential suitor until you knew him better. And a large proportion of our women were very savvy in terms of what they did to learn about a potential suitor before actually pursuing the relationship with them. The number one thing everyone did was Googled. I would say 100% of our population said, yep, I instantly Googled him and I learned what I could about him, actually pursuing the relationship with them. The number one thing everyone did was Googled. I would say 100 book pages to other things online to see what they could learn about this potential person. And then we had a handful of really savvy people who had purchased background check software, and they did full background checks on the people before they pursued a relationship with them. They looked at law enforcement records, and they really went out of their way to get to know people. Unfortunately, this was a much smaller sample of the population that did this. Most of the people merely Googled and saw what they could find online quickly. And one problem that women expressed there was a lot of were scammers. And interestingly, the Plenty of Fish site actually warns women that they may be approached by scammers. Here we saw women who were aware that there were scammers and were very savvy in terms of what they could do. And this is where we also heard horrible stories where women had been scammed and had been financially exploited to tunes of large amounts of money. But what we learned was that there's a kind of a profile of a scammer. Women all talked about how their relationship started with very flowery and romantic messages, and the suitor instantly drew them in, calling them things like hello pretty or hello beautiful, telling them how wonderful they were, and really coming across as the perfect man. They often talked about how they had these expensive houses and cars, and they had very well-known jobs, and they came across as that perfect person. Yet whenever the woman wanted to meet them, they always had some sort of overseas alibi. Typically, he worked for a very big business, and he had just flown to England or just flown to Africa and was unfortunately unable to meet at that time. The person was constantly out of town, but the allure and the charm really brought them in. And usually that's when they moved out of that scripted response and they started to have the communication, and that's when the I need money, and can you send me $10,000, and I'm trapped, and can you do this? And that's when the scam started to come in. Interestingly, women said that at the beginning phases, the conversations were so scripted and perfect, and they could believe that this was a well-educated person that they were communicating with. But as the relationship evolved and they moved further and further, suddenly there were all kinds of grammatical errors, and it became very clear that this was a different person that they were talking to. And so they quickly learned to identify scammers and to avoid scammers. Unfortunately, some women were scammed prior to learning that. Now, a number of the women we talked with talked about the importance of confronting these scammers or even perpetrators. A lot of women shared how they would receive sexually explicit emails, they would receive pictures, they would receive unsolicited, harassing emails. And so, while we believe that this turns quite a few women off to the online dating, we also found that the women in our population generally knew that they could stop that. They could send a warning message saying, look, that's enough, I'm not interested in this. And suddenly the person realized this is not an easy victim and would move on. Or they would could block or report that person. Women also talked about how if they just called out the scammer and said, you know, I know you're a scammer, it instantly ended that communication. Now, one thing we found was that women, and this was what we found in our initial pilot, was that women were really hesitant to report things. This may be a function of age and situation, but most women were very unlikely to have reported a negative event to law enforcement or to family and friends. And what we heard from them in terms of family or friends is they'd put themselves out there online and they didn't want their child to think, okay, here's mom, she's finally lost it, and now this is the first step in us intervening. And so they were hesitant to share that I had done this thing and this negative event happened. But we found that women were more likely to report what had happened to the website, to say, look, I've been approached by this person and I'm being harassed and I want it to stop. We also found that there were women who reported to their bank, particularly after having sent money to a potential suitor, that this had happened to them. And so women knew that this was fraudulent and went out of their way to report those events to protect others. Now, when women moved to online dating, we found that they tended to be very savvy as well in terms of what was acceptable for their first meeting. They liked to meet at a very public spot. They recommended, when we asked what you could do to reduce your risk, was absolutely meet in a public spot that is well known to you. The time of day was important, meeting for coffee or for lunch. And having a spot that was familiar but convenient to home but not close to home. They didn't want to meet a potential suitor in a place that they frequented in case that didn't work out. They also talked about the most common protective strategy was being sure to drive yourself. Women shared countless negative experiences as soon as they got into a car with someone else. And so they learned quickly that you want to have that control. You drive yourself and you leave by yourself so that you have control over the situation should it go poorly. And the most common protective factor we heard among women was do not enter another person's car. They also talked about the importance of notifying others of a date. And this was something that wasn't as common as we would have liked to see among older women, but people did talk about how they let a friend or a roommate or a family member know that they were going on a date. Others also talked about writing a note and just leaving it on the fridge or the counter that I'm going on a date with John 965 and I've left at this time in case I don't return, so that they wanted someone to know where they were. They included, of course, the date, the time, and the location. And this was one of those things that we would really like to encourage all women to do, because some women just went out, and they don't have family close, they didn't have friends close, they were here trying to meet new people, and they just went with someone for the first time. And so this is a great intervention tool. A lot of women also talked about having an exit strategy. They were pretty savvy about some of the things they do in terms of being ready and having an exit strategy to the date, having a friend who was going to call and check in with them, and if things didn't go well, that friend had a crisis that they would have to go to. They talked about just leaving uncomfortable situations and having the waiter at a restaurant walk them to their car. Some talked about bringing a friend, and this was actually quite common in this group, bringing friends with them on the date, to make sure it was safe until they felt comfortable with their partner. And a number of women also talked about how it was important to them to pay, because if they paid their own way, they didn't owe anyone anything, and they could be much safer in their relationship. Now, interestingly, our population was pretty savvy, and we believe they were much more savvy than the average population who is dating online, especially given what we know about other age groups. They tended to relate this to common sense, and this is the potential for a very strong intervention strategy that really can relate to women and what they're experiencing in a common sense way, to share tips and strategies for keeping yourself safe when you're dating online or attempting to date online. Women shared incredible risk reduction strategies that we could share with others, because while this sounds like common sense to us, and it sounds like common sense to them, what we saw when we were looking at profiles of women online is that it's not necessarily common sense to everybody. And so sharing these strategies may help women that are at risk. And we know that there's a lot of gaps in the existing literature and the existing resources. For example, Plenty of Fish talks about keeping yourself safe online. They don't give any strategies or tips or protocols. They let you know that you can block someone, but they don't teach someone how to do that. And so there's a lot of opportunity for us to work with sites such as Plenty of Fish or Match or Harmony to really help keep women, especially women who may not be as technologically savvy or not used to dating. A lot of the women we talked to, this was the first person that they had dated since their spouse of 45 years had passed away. And so there's a lot of opportunity for education and intervention tools that could help make this a safer, happier experience for women online dating. There's also opportunity for intervention and education campaigns. And then normalizing that that common sense to online dating, but also making sure that women didn't normalize the negative behaviors. We heard a lot of women say, well, that's just part of dating online. That's just part of this. Well, it's not. You shouldn't have to be harassed. You shouldn't have to be abused because you're trying to find a partner. And so one of the most important things that we could do is help to normalize what is and is not a safe and healthy relationship. And so there's undoubtedly room for additional research in this area. Thank you.